Today, how one school in Birmingham is trying to tackle segregation among British kids. And in opinion, The Guardian's parliamentary sketch writer on how the culture in Parliament has shifted as we hurtle into one of the most important weeks in the UK's recent political history.
It's 6:07. I've just woken up.
Camero, levántate.
¿Qué hora es?
It's 6:30. Usually when I wake up, I will put on music.
It's around 7 o'clock now, so second step is brushing my teeth.
There are big divisions in our society, and evidence suggests that these problems begin early on in life, that many kids are growing up in segregated schools.
So it's like very diverse from areas, because I know a boy from Sally Oak will be a lot more different than a boy from, say, Newtown or like Ladywood or Hockley or stuff like that.
Just walking to the station now, it's really dark and a bit cold.
But new efforts are being made to try and understand these divides. And these kids all attend a new school in Birmingham, a city that has some of the most segregated schools in the country. And this school has been built on an innovative principle.
That's really different to me, because when I was in my old school, it was like black or white. There wasn't really any different sort of that middle ground or anything like that. So it was really cool to know someone who's Spanish and a mixed race. So yeah.
I'm on my way to school with my friend Katia and Esme. Katia and Esme, say hi.
Hi.
Their secondary school is taking radical steps to eradicate segregation.
And I'm about to leave. It's now 7:23.
Bye, Mom.
Cam is one of the pupils at the University of Birmingham School, and he travels for an hour every day to get there.
So we're going to get off in the next stop, and it's 7:37.
Because this school's idea is to draw its pupils not just from one surrounding area, but from a range of areas from far across the city.
So the number 74 is coming, and we're going to get on.
It might sound simple, but this is the only school we can find doing this in the UK. From The Guardian, I'm India Rackerson. Today in Focus, could this brand new system help to end segregation in schools? Okay, so because of the way the UK school system usually works, with catchment areas where schools pick pupils from the local area, schools very often lack diversity. So, Amna, what is the long-term impact of this on society?
This has been quite hard to measure, but there was a really good study that was released this year by Simon Burgess, who's a researcher at Bristol University. And it found that if you went to a school where you weren't really having what he calls meaningful interaction with people who are of other ethnicities or religions or class, you didn't really have a great impression of those people, because it was largely defined by, one, what you see in the media, and two, what your parents and your community said of those people.
Guardian reporter Amna Modin has been looking into the University of Birmingham school.
So you ended up having these quite hostile feelings towards them, and then that kind of goes on to influence the kind of adult that you are. But you found when you went to a school that was really well integrated, and you could end up having that important nuance that you need in a multicultural society.
How segregated are UK schools?
So segregation in UK schools has been overall going down. Different kids from different ethnicities are mixing more, which is great. But there's some areas and some major cities where it's in schools it's remained stubbornly high. And there's also the problem of the really awkward way we allocate school places. It's this thing called catchment areas, where the closer you are to the school, the higher of a chance you have of getting into that school. Who can go to that school is largely defined by who can afford that certain mortgage and who can afford to live in that really nice area.
Right, and house prices go up if the schools get better, and it's kind of like a bit of a vicious circle.
Yeah, it's like this little bubble.
I don't know if people think to use the word segregation in relation to schools. It really makes you think of apartheid and the civil rights movement in the States.
Yeah, so when we talk about segregation, our mind thinks of how intense the civil rights movement was to try to integrate black and white students. That's not really the case here in the UK. You know, the levels of segregation here are much, much lower, but it is still a worrying level. So I think with the rise of Trump and Brexit and some of the new enthusiasm that we're seeing for the far right. One question that's been bugging me was, how do we make sure people don't hate each other or fear each other or have these quite hostile feelings towards each other? So I went to this school in Birmingham that just opened a few years ago and wondered, well, does it have the answers there? So I was reading the government's green paper on integration, and in it they point to this University of Birmingham school as a great example for having quite an integrated student population.
When you first read about it, what did you think?
It's like, what? Mostly because I was like, they have 4 catchment areas, and that's just, even now I've not been able to find anything like it. There's these kids being essentially bused from one part of the city to another. But this isn't Birmingham, Alabama, it's Birmingham, UK.
The integration is created by this kind of unique system that they've developed called the nodal system, which is a great name. Tell me how the nodal system works.
Essentially, they have 4 nodes across the city. By nodes, they basically mean an area. So the school takes 50% of its income from Selly Oak, and that's where it's based. And then it takes the other 3, which is 16.666%, from Hall Green, Jewellery Quarter and Small Heath. So those 3 nodes were specifically put there because they are some of the most deprived parts of Birmingham. So I start the day meeting this kid called Cameron.
The way that I think now is not the way that I thought before. And I feel proud of myself for that because like it changes everything, yeah.
14 years old, really, really lovely, kind kid who travels for over an hour to get to school. Obviously, it's actually completely abnormal in the UK for a kid to be getting up that early and traveling that far. He lives on a 10th floor flat in this tower block.
Gonna go downstairs.
And whereabouts does he live in Birmingham?
To the bus stop.
He lives in an area called the Jewellery Quarter. It's around the northwest of Birmingham.
So now we're gonna walk, we're gonna cross the road, and we're gonna go in that direction.
It's this really up and coming area that's historically been really deprived, but it's been gentrified. So we're seeing all these new flats mixed in with old tower blocks and different estates. Gets his first bus.
Oh, yeah, this is us.
And then that's when he meets his friend, and we're introduced to Glyn Harrington.
Okay, who's Glyn?
Glyn. He can talk for England, that's for sure.
On Mondays, we're normally to ourselves. I'm not going to lie. We're always listening to music. We're, like, in our own zone, just, like, bobbing his head, singing his, like, Spanish songs and stuff.
And I just asked him, you know, a bit awkward questions, like, do you think about how integrated your school is? Or how is
it? Do they think about it?
Not much anymore. I think it's become the norm for them. But
the only other friends I had in my primary school and like another secondary school I was going to go to was white friends, and I was just going to be like, oh, golly gosh, tip top, hello, and stuff like that. And so it was really cool to know someone who's Spanish and a mixed race. So yeah.
And Cameron also pointed out that, yeah, he went to a Catholic primary school and he didn't really know anything about any other religion until he went to the school.
So we're near, like, now the University of Birmingham campus.
And we just start moving in towards South Birmingham, which is a really suburban area, really lovely Georgian houses. And then we finally get to the school.
So there's a real mixture of kids from all over the city by the time that school bus pulls in.
Yeah, I've never seen so many headscarves and braids and buzz cuts and some really cool indie kids. Like, such a mix of different kids in one school, all hanging out with each other.
So it is 8:12 and we've just got off the bus at the stop, and we're walking towards school now.
So we're what was it like when you arrived?
I was pretty stunned, actually, walking into the school. I've reported on education for a little while, and this by far is the nicest school I've ever stepped into.
That's quite a big claim.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's just so bright and airy. It has these large glass panels. Like, I've never seen corridors that were so large before. They specifically did that so several kids on wheelchairs could use that corridor.
Spacious, modern, just room for ideas.
And what did the morning feel like?
Really hectic, you know, kids rushing in, teachers telling off students for not having their shirts tucked in, others trying to figure out what the drama is for that week.
This is music.
loud.
School focuses a lot on art and music, so as we were walking through the school, I just couldn't ever escape the sound of steel pans. They followed me everywhere. Just kind
all
of
all the time.
Just all the time. It just bled into every classroom.
Add one. So 6 + 1 gives us 7.
Oh yeah, they played this amazing rendition of Drake's Hotline Bling. Computers were state of the art. There are these rowing machines in their gyms that they could use. It's such a diverse group of students, but not just ethnically. There were also loads of able-bodied students and disabled students mixing together in a way that I've never seen before. And that kind of made me realise, okay, I understand why this school is so massively oversubscribed already. One arm of the school is obviously the integrated population. The other is its massive focus on character education. So to put it simply, character education is just, how do you raise kids who are kind and compassionate and show courage? And they just really build it into the students from the get-go.
You get points for character, sportsmanship.
Yes.
So we kind of observed this year 7 class that started off with the teacher asking, so who's shown really good character?
Who would like to nominate someone to be the star of the week this week? Dagen.
Christine.
Why are you nominating Christine?
And suddenly you saw these 11-year-old kids putting their hand up and saying, I want to nominate this person because they try really hard, or I want to nominate this person because they're really, really nice. And I think someone even nominated the teacher for being really funny. And
Mr. Barr, why me?
The school is also really experimental. It has this project called Project Wayfinder.
Project Wayfinder?
Yeah, so that's okay. Essentially...
That's quite serious.
I know, yeah. Right? And it's essentially getting school kids to think about their journeys. How do I have a fulfilling life?
So that's a spark there.
Then we had these two kids who explained their Wayfinder journals.
And then you've got this here, which is a turning point. So that's kind of realising how that could be achieved.
It does all sound really kind of like peace and love.
Yeah,
very... A bit more like a retreat, actually, yeah. than a school. But it is still a school, so
yeah.
They must be encountering some issues.
Yeah, it's a school in a major city and it deals with issues that schools deal with. And I think also like the head of school kind of admitting that when kids are in year 7, they've had incidents of racism.
Where that's the first year where you can enter the school.
Yeah, where kids have used, you know, like the N-word or the P-word against each other. Also other problems of like homophobia, transphobia. And then it tends to patter out, she says, once they're in year 10. And I guess that's because they're completely drilling this idea of we're all equal. But it was really heartbreaking to see just a week after we left them having to deal with this quite violent incident and seeing having ambulances and police cars suddenly come to the school gates.
What happened?
3 teenagers from another school came down to the school and stabbed these other school kids in what the police describe as quite a targeted attack. Thankfully, none of the students were hurt that badly. They don't have life-sustaining injuries. And it came as a huge shock to the school and the local area and all the students. It came as a big shock to me because I left the school thinking it had this little bubble. I was so happy to see kids like Cam and Glenn being able to escape into that. But it also kind of shows the importance of what they're doing with around stuff like character education. They're raising these kids to be prepared for real life problems. And yeah, they can't hide away from that as a school.
Did you get a chance to talk more to Cam, Glynn, Harriet and Kaya while you were there?
Yeah. And we sat them down in the library and just got them talking about how the school has changed them.
So maturity, but a type of maturity.
We also talk about accepting people for who they are. So we did this one on about LGBTQ. And so I think this was in year 7, to kind of like accept them now.
I guess I was personally taken back by how eloquent they were when they spoke about this issue.
So I've become a lot more patient and a lot more accepting.
Stereotypes are sort of like nowhere near the strength of an actual person's personality.
There was this really funny moment with Kaya where she kind of said that, you know, this whole character thing can get a bit boring.
It gets a bit cheesy. Like, I'm not five, I understand. Like, I have to be a good person.
But actually, what she didn't seem to realise was that this is second nature to you and you're tired of it. But that's not really happening across the country.
I like the vibes. Just that sometimes things that happen in our society just like let people's spirits down and stuff like that. But I think that people in this school are all like positive.
Everyone's learned their own lessons, and I feel like my path has taken a turn for the best because I
think
like
they're more thoughtful. You know, I think when you speak to particularly Harriet and Kaya, they both said they just have a think before they say something. And if they've said something that, you know, they probably shouldn't have said, they didn't feel like it was the end of the world. They knew that they could have a conversation and challenge it.
So do you think, Anna, this is a good way to end segregation?
I think it's one interesting way to end segregation. Schools are really taking the lead on this in a way that the government isn't, taking this into their own hands with the admission policies.
If all schools use this kind of nodal system, then of course it would change the way people moved house to get into particular catchment areas, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's one researcher pointed out that, let's say this school begins to do fantastically, in 10 years' time, parents are very smart. They can all end up moving into these areas to get their kids into this school. So another way is having this thing called a lottery. And some school in Brighton are trialling this where, you know, they just run a lottery and whoever gets in and it's not dependent. And there's no way you can plan to get into this school. But there's a lot of resistance from parents. From their point of view, if they've bought a house near a good school and now they don't get to decide where their kid's going and they don't have a much impact on it. But then overall, it's better for society.
So this school was not cheap to start. How much money did it cost? And could the money have been better spent? Bearing in mind that schools have faced massive cuts recently. I mean, you've got schools that can't even afford toilet roll or whiteboards. Mm-hmm. And then there's millions going into a brand new school.
So the Department of Education put 20 million into this school. Most schools aren't playing around with that kind of money. And I think there's a fair question to be asked whether that money would have been better spent on comprehensives near those three nodes. When the school was being built, they did this impact assessment to see what effect it'll end up having on other comprehensives that are near the nodal system. There was two schools that aren't too far from where Glyn and Cameron live that had a high impact.
Cam and Glyn could potentially be going to these schools.
Yeah. Those schools desperately need students.
Because they get money per student, don't
they? Yeah, and they get more money for every poor student. So there is a question to be asked with, instead of trying, you know, always trying new things and always building new schools, can we just focus on what we have and try to make that better? But the response that I got from the school when I asked that and from parents is that, what's the point of putting money into a school where we're not responding to the big issue of segregation, of inequality?
One more question for you while I have you. What should parents be doing about this?
Parents should want their kids to interact with kids of different backgrounds. It makes their kid a much more well-rounded person. And what's really interesting about this school is it's largely driven by parent choice. Like, the school wouldn't work at all. You know, people like Cam wouldn't be travelling that far if Cam's mum wasn't up for it. This is what needs to happen to have a socially cohesive society.
Amna, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You can read Amna Modin's full report on the University of Birmingham School at theguardian.com. Next up, from party fault lines to a collapse of trust, how the Brexit debate has reshaped British Parliament. Now, John Crace is The Guardian's parliamentary sketch writer. He spends most of his time observing MPs' every movements and the ins and outs in Westminster. And since the Brexit vote, he's seen a culture change in Parliament, and not one for the better.
Well, I think sort of regardless of what happens, I mean, Brexit has toxified everything. And I don't think that even if the vote goes through now, it really settles everything. I mean, I think the sort of level of trust of politicians in each other and the country in politicians has been eroded. You know, this is only the beginning. Even once we get a withdrawal agreement over the line, there's still the future partnership, which is sort of 85% of the hard work. So we're going to be arguing about this stuff for the next 10 years. I mean, you know, it's not going to be a relaxing ride. It's driving me nuts, to be honest. I'm losing sleep. As we get closer and closer to March the 29th, the sort of feeling becomes sort of more immediate and more pressing. Yeah, I mean, as the parliamentary sketch writer, I spend 4 days a week sitting in the press gallery, sort of watching the MPs. And when I started back in 2014, it was a much sleepier, slower affair. Now it's as if sort of Parliament has sort of been mainlining amphetamines and idiocy in equal measures. Just everything feels more urgent, more combative, more toxic. It's a much more unpleasant place. The language of the debate has become more unpleasant. There are people making wild assertions and claims about what will happen to the country when they really don't know one way or another. Everything has become much more polarised and binary. I think the key way Parliament has changed over the last 2 years is that normal party allegiances have sort of broken down, rather. I mean, right now, ahead of the vote, we don't actually know how it's going to fall out and what kind of party alignments are going to be shaping up in the next 3 to 6 months or even sort of years. The implications are potentially very serious. It's almost as if Tuesday's Brexit vote isn't a whipped vote. Tories, they don't feel obliged to prop up the government. And likewise, we see in the Labour Party as well, we've got Labour Remainers who have quite openly come out and said they're going to support Theresa May's deal because they represent constituencies that have a sort of strong Leave element. There's a possibility that Theresa May lose by something like 400 votes to 250 or something like that. I mean, a government hasn't had such a catastrophic defeat in memory, and we're sort of in unprecedented times. Because there is a danger that the Tory party splits completely over Brexit. Regardless of whatever deal we get, there are going to be a lot of people who are severely unhappy. And likewise in the Labour Party, Labour is holding together, surprisingly, but it's quite fragile. I mean, it seems to be a game of sort of brinkmanship between which party fractures first. It feels like all bets are off.
You can follow every twist and turn of today's vote and this week's events as they happen on our live blog at theguardian.com. And that's it for today. Thanks to Amna Modin, the students at the University of Birmingham School, and John Crace. And don't forget, we really want to know what you think of Today in Focus. Do leave your reviews and comments wherever you are listening right now. Today's producers were Brenna Daldorf and Elizabeth Cassin, and sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The execs are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll see you tomorrow.